So Apple is so determined to own your dashboard that they've now set their sights on the water. Yes, really. CarPlay is coming to pontoon boats. Yes, those pontoon boats. The slowest, most relaxing vessels on any lake. And Apple wants to put a software update notification in the middle of that. But behind the joke, there's a real question worth asking. Why is Apple so hungry for this? And what happens when they get it? So there's some really big stories this week. Let's get into it. This is the Tech Hangout. And with that, I'm going to introduce my panel for today. I have two amazing people with me discussing the big stories that we found in tech this week. And I'm going to start with the guy in the baseball shirt. I'm guessing it's baseball. Ben?
Cubbies.
Yay. Hey, got it.
Go Cubs, go. And it is great to be here, Patrice.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. And I don't know. This seems to be, what is that? Some sport, right? Baseball.
Yep. It is the sport.
The sport. Okay. That's what you say. I think people would disagree. But...
Yeah. Ben is in the area. He's in Wisconsin, but he likes the Cubs, which is a tantamount to being a traitor in Wisconsin. I live out of Iowa makes sense because that's where all the summer farm teams for the Cubs are. I live out of the area, but grew up a couple of miles away from Wrigley Field, Cubs Park. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you've got two lost Cubs fans on today. however, they are on such a winning streak. When I saw Ben in the Cubs uniform shirt, I thought, yeah, I get it. Ben's excited.
Yes. Hashtag MVPCA.
Yeah.
Jeff would say, go sports team.
Yeah. I love their outfits.
they are definitely good. The other voice you're hearing, and the other, I guess, Cubs fan is Marty. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. This is what I've been doing the last couple of weeks because I've had time off from the university. I've been fulfilling all of my regular doctor's appointments and basically getting like all my service appointments done. Mm-hmm. And this is the thread that kicked me over the top today. Sir, can I have your last name? Gencius. Gencius. And then I wait for about 45 seconds to a minute before the next question. And all I can imagine is the person on the other end, and I've seen this in person too, is on a really slow computer or really bad service network with old software. And I'm like, don't you realize how this impacts the customer interface? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's been my observation over the last week, 2 weeks.
The company.
And it's frustrating. I don't think businesses think about it, you know?
No, it's all about
And trust me, as someone who has worked in a call center, the customer service agent is frustrated as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're using that crap all day. Yeah, it's all about KPIs and ROI and like bottom line. It's not about the customer's time. Like that doesn't matter.
No.
So, yeah, I've had to deal with having a wasp nest removed from my tree about the size of a basketball.
Wow.
I have flooding in the basement that I am waiting for a return call on. And then, you know, going out to a bunch of different doctor's appointments. So this has been real present for me, how slow computers are.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, these days, especially, they feel especially slow. I don't know what it is, but I think it's just everything else has gotten so fast that they feel especially slow these days.
Yeah.
On my end, it's all busy. Yeah. It's hot. We've had 100, 510 degrees Fahrenheit, so about 40, 41, 42 degrees Celsius here this week. He did another heat wave, I think the third or something. It's about to end today for a couple of days, but then it comes back. So it's not over. Mm. Yeah, but not a lot of rain. Like, it's not that, oh, it's cooler and now it's going to rain. There might be some thunderstorms, but very little rain. Like, it's just, everything is dry here. We've been in a drought, like, literally. You would think, like, Austria, like, all those lakes and rivers and green trees and all of that. We have areas where they had to restrict water now and so on, because it's getting that bad. Like, the Danube is on a historic low. They had to shut down, I think, Hungary? I think they shut down nuclear power plants because there's no water, so not enough to cool it and so on. So, yeah, that's Europe right now.
So do we blame that on global warming, or do we blame that on calls on
call centers?
On AI centers?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think both.
And aliens. Don't forget aliens.
Oh, yeah, we forgot about aliens, exactly. And who else can we blame it on? We'll find someone.
I don't know.
There's enough people to blame. It's like politicians. So it's always the other side, right? There's always their fault. Yeah. Anyway, we got some fun topics today. And I want to start with, since we just started talking about AI, I wanted to see what Marty's story is about, because it's about Siri AI.
Yeah, it's an interesting. The title caught me. Granted, mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the idea, the concept here is, I trained Siri AI to answer my messages,
mm-hmm.
and I just activated SAI. So I'm going to be careful about saying the word. And I thought, this is where I really want to go. Mm-hmm. With AI, if I could simply manage most of the crap messages I get, a reminder of Siri, the SAI is still running, so I'm trying to shut it off while I talk. If I could deal with all the messages and reminders like, hey, do you know you have an appointment on Thursday? I get that on Tuesday. Wednesday, hey, you still have that appointment on Thursday. These are all text messages coming to
yep.
mm-hmm. my phone. Mm-hmm. And apparently this article talks about a person, the author, who set it up to respond automatically using SAI context. And got some interesting responses. Now, the article later goes in and says, well, you can set this up manually or you can set it up automatically. We recommend that you set it up manually, that you still have to interact with your device. But I don't know. I mean, if I could set up a widget for unknown callers, most of which turn out to be spam, or messaging systems from hospitals who are reminding me for the fifth time that I have an appointment, where I have already put in the thing that said, yeah, I got it, we're cool. But the next day they send me another message and another message and another message. I would do it. So my question to the group is, and it depends is not a good answer.
Yeah.
Would you set up your message system to automate responses to people? Now, if you're going to suggest it depends, I want to know what the depends is.
Okay, I'll say it. It depends. I think for some things, yes, and for some things, no. So the text chains I have with Jeff, for example, and Jerome, and like some of my friends, no. Because those are human person-to-person or group interactions. I want real humans to be in there. The automated messages I'm getting for, hey, there's a delivery, or like you said, hey, you have an appointment, or anything like that. Yeah, why not? Let an AI handle it, because, I mean, honestly, I don't really want a text message for that anyway. It's just a notification to telling me that something is happening that I most likely already know about. Or it's spam, which in this case, I don't even care. So, yeah, would depend.
It would be fun to set up particularly rude widgets for spam.
Oh, yes.
And see if their AI interacts rudely back with my widget-generated rude AI.
And very soon they're speaking a completely different language and nobody understands what they're even saying.
Or they start saying, like, do you like your kneecaps? Do you like your meatbags kneecaps? Is probably a better
response. Yes. I mean, what is the worst thing that could happen here? Honestly, what could be the worst thing that happens?
Ben has a Terminator in the background for the people listening.
That's okay. I mean, that's all right in my world.
Well, I mean, if it does,
then... so I don't have to get any of those messages anymore.
It's true. Yeah. Yes. I mean, honestly, that is the thing a lot of people want from AI. Like, take care of the annoying, stupid stuff that we don't want to deal with, that doesn't really help us.
I want a personal assistant, I can't afford one, so let us AI do it for me. If it's bad at their job, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
Yeah. Right? I mean, here's the thing. SAI is not up to OpenAI or Claude or insert high-end LLM here, but it fulfills what we always wanted from S-Lady.
Mm-hmm.
And for something that is aimed at consumers, that's a win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean... I'm not sure I agree with that they're not up to that same standard. I think, I mean, what I've seen so far, it's very, very close, if anything. There's some flaws still in the implementation, but I think those are just bugs. But I would say it's surprisingly good, which is not a surprise, because it's backed by Gemini models. So, and we know those are actually not bad. So,
some of the automated messages I get for appointments and such, or reminders for appointments, would you like to put this in your calendar? Chances are it's already in my calendar.
Exactly.
But if it's not, and there's no harm, I guess, in adding it again. Then do you want a reminder of this upcoming event? And sometimes I need, because I do a lot of medical appointments early in the morning, because I'm up early and I want to get running. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of a reminder the night before, because I won't think about it until I wake up that morning. It's like, oh crap, I got to get, got to get to the doctors.
Especially if I don't know, you have a blood test and you can't eat for whatever 12 hours and stuff like that, and you forgot about it.
Yeah.
No, it totally makes sense. I mean, it's also like sometimes you make those appointments weeks or months ahead and like you will forget that, it was this week that this is happening. So a reminder is useful, but as I said, it doesn't have to be a text message. Like it can be in your calendar and it just pings you a day before and says, or your AI tells you and like Siri says, hey, just wanted to remind you have a blood test tomorrow, and so please make sure that you only drink water the last 12 hours or something like that. That's fine.
Yeah, that's a pretty typical use for me, that I need that kind of reminder. So I feel it's a good setup. But I'm ready to turn it over with all of its flaws.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that, because the majority of, and you say there are personal responses that with some of your friends, how do they know? And does SAI have the capability of looking at previous messaging responses and realize, well, Marty's pretty playful in this one. And there's a kind of, jousting, mental jousting that goes back and forth. Mm-hmm. So it can add that context or that style into its response. And, you know, ultimately, it could be that you become the SAI response set becomes your identity.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of your identity trying to come into the SAI response set. It's always been my my issue. It's like, how do you know I didn't write it?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you can see that I have you can check that out and see that a lot of it looks like it could potentially be AI, but maybe I've learned to talk in AI speak, and that's me. And your model of finding out whether it's really me is bad.
I mean, in a sense, that's inevitable, right? I mean, just like our language in text messages is not the same as what we speak right now. Like, we've over time in letters back in the day and then text messages, it's kind of a different way of writing things, a different way of communicating. I think it's just inevitable that we will also adapt, or probably have already adapted to our agents, right? And how we talk to them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm hoping it's closer right now, probably closer to texting, right? And that's why people say please and thank you, and people say, don't say that to agents. And I'm like, no, because that's just humans being human. And I think we should not skip that. I mean, it might not matter. Yes, it might waste whatever half a token for that. But usually AIs are, well, LLMs these days are pretty good at just parsing that out. It's like, it's not important to them. To them, it's not important. But for us, for the connection and for the human side, it is important to have that. To feel this is still a somewhat human conversation, even if we know it's not, right? To have our own humanity preserved in that way and not talk like a robot to a robot, right? So, I think that will be interesting to see. Let's put it this way.
By your command.
By your command, yes. Speaking of commands, Ben, you brought the headline stories for today, which is CarPlay coming to boats.
This is a fun and interesting little summer story, which it kind of got me on my own little thought exercise, but let's kind of talk about it here. Mm-hmm. Mastercraft Boats, which is one of the biggest boat makers in North America, is adding CarPlay to its Crest and Balise pontoon boats. Also known as the party barge. So not only will this be able to play all your stuff, but it is working with a company called Savvy Navi to bring on-water navigation as well.
Savvy Navi.
So there. Yes. Yeah. And why is that important? Well, I can't talk today. Rivers are messy.
Yes.
You have snags. You have rocks.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of want to know what the water level is.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't find yourself walking or swimming a little bit to shore to get someone to get your boat out.
Yep.
This will include the prescription. It's subscription, it says. I can't talk today.
A prescription maybe as well for all the Xanax you need.
Yes. But I have to say, for all the years there has been CarPlay, number one, why has nobody done this?
Yep.
And number two, why hasn't Apple and Google, for that matter, kind of made this a priority? Because leisure boats are a huge market. Not only that, in addition to thinking about them in leisure boats, what about commercial tows? Putting like a water navigation app in their first party.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of bringing in all those navigation charts and giving basically more money for Apple's CarPlay partners, you know, to make there.
Hmm. I mean,
yeah.
I'm kind of wondering, I mean, for those, like, what you said, like the pontoon boats, I mean, that's more like a leisure thing. So it's for people, they have cars, they have CarPlay, they buy a boat. I think there it makes sense. I'm not sure it makes sense for more commercial, like commercial. Okay.
Yeah, I think commercial already has quite a sophisticated radar sonar system.
Yes.
Built in, and they're not going to do it through CarPlay.
Yeah.
Savvy Navi is the app. Mm-hmm. And I imagine what the app did before CarPlay was people just used it on their phones.
Yeah.
And as a result, they got the information that they're getting through CarPlay.
Mm-hmm.
What they will be getting through CarPlay. Now, here's the thing, and I don't know about the app. Is it basically, and I assume the answer to this question is yes, is it basically scraping data from other people who've been up and down the river and then using that to come up with a better navigation piece? Like, rivers change underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Flow patterns change depending on tides and things like that. So it's not that you've got this wonderful new navigate. Well, you do have this wonderful new navigation system, but they're also using your data to make it a new wonderful navigation system. So in a sense, I know where you were on Saturday because mm-hmm. your data says you were on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it's interesting.
But you can also check Instagram for that data.
Yeah usually for those people. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, the boats that they're putting them on are the real high-end, expensive. Basically, they're being used as pubs on water by their owners. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with so. I mean, I've been thinking. I know nothing about boats, but I know a little bit about aviation, like especially general aviation, where this would be. Like, I was thinking about that. Like, there's a lot of apps for GA that, like, ForeFlight or SkyDemon or Garmin has now one. I'm like, people are using iPads or iPhones today for that, and would CarPlay in planes for that be useful? And maybe. I mean, it's similar in a sense. Like, what you need is you have those very specialized maps, and they change, right? Because new restrictions, new, as you said, new flow patterns. I mean, in the air is a little bit different. There's water, like air flows differently, but sometimes there's like new routes or new restrictions that get put in. New, like, airports, airports expand their restricted zones around them that you shouldn't fly into, or at least not without permission, or new restricted zones get put up over cities, stuff like that. So there's a constant, like, maps in aviation get updated multiple times a year, but minimum once a year. Also, mm-hmm. Earth changes slightly over time and so on, like magnetic field changes and so on. So they're very, very specialized maps. And those apps provide those.
And here's where I think they can extend themselves into, given that mm-hmm. Apple is going to interject ads into maps. So I'm floating down the river. I've kind of emptied my cooler. And, oh, look, pop up. I can pull off to the side to Ben's Oyster Bar. And pick up some more liquid refreshment mm-hmm. and some oysters.
And gas.
And if you do it like Waze, you can be warned where the patrol boats are mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. the river that might come and check to make sure you're not too intoxicated to be driving that ultra expensive float on the river.
Yeah, DNR boat check ahead.
I mean, I see possibilities.
It's definitely a good question, Ben. Like, why has it been taking this long to do this?
Yeah,
it seems like an obvious idea. It just seems to have taken forever to do this.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I mean, this is a third party implementation. Mm-hmm. Too, we know Apple has no involvement in it, but also, as far as we know, Apple is doing nothing to stop it either.
No, I think Apple would be totally fine to say, "Hey, you wanna have CarPlay on your boat infotainment system? Pff, if it works for you, you're like pay us some money and you get it."
Yeah, but I have to.
I think it's the hardware issue. I think that's what's new is they're putting new hardware in that allows CarPlay to run.
Yeah.
On these. So it's not why haven't they done this in a long time? Well, first of all, CarPlay hasn't been around for a long time or effectively for a long time. And secondly, it's the getting the right hardware in these models, which takes time to do. You can't just flip it in a short period of time.
I mean, CarPlay is at least 10 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, Marty definitely has a point there, because you can't put your standard off the shell Android double DIN in a boat, because they're not designed to work with water spray.
Yeah, and that's where Savvy Navi was probably an app they had on their phone, and this is just an incorporation because they've included the hardware, which means they're doing more stuff through the hardware on the boat instead of having additional hardware like, okay, and carry your phone so you can use Savvy Navi. So.
Yeah, interesting.
But I do have to say, if this ends up popular, I think the competitors, as well as third-party solutions, could start getting CarPlay in a hurry.
Yeah, I mean, always. Like, that's not. I want to move on to the last story for today. I brought an EU story because I found that an interesting topic today. So in the EU, I think might have heard about that, or we might have even mentioned that here or there. They're working on this whole topic of age verification is kind of a global topic. I know some states in the US have done it, like, social media or porn sites or insert whatever they want to regulate. It needs to be age verified. So the EU jumped on that bandwagon a little while ago and said, yes, we want to have an EU-wide age verification for social media mostly, but then expanded it to some other services. And in a typical EU thing, this is an open source project. The EU does a lot of, EU also countries do a lot of their software that they develop as open source. So because they say, okay, public pays for it, so it should be public good. So this specific project for this age verification system or app has drawn some criticism because they basically require what they call hardware-bound attestation. So meaning your secure enclave, your Android, what is it called, TEE, Strongbox, all of that, basically stores some cryptographic keys on the hardware, on a device in a secure manner. And that way, basically, you can ensure that this device is allowed to access that and has run through age verification without sharing any personal information like your birth date, your full identity document, anything like that. The problem with that approach is that it, of course, binds you to hardware that can do that, right? You need you need an Android phone that can do that, or you need an Apple phone that can do that, or maybe Mac or Windows PC that can store these hardware keys. But it doesn't work for example, Linux right now, Linux desktop. There's no way of doing that because this client is not available. So all you can do is basically show a QR code and then scan it with your phone. That seems to be their solution. And there's many, many other use cases where it simply doesn't work because the EU doesn't care. They're like, do you need a hardware device? Because this is our approach and this is mandatory. So the topic, I think, is that just a reality and everybody has a device like that and you're like, just move on? Or is that excluding people and excluding maybe also older devices and saying, well, you should move on? Excluding also some of the nerds that probably run their own, whatever, have their own special hardware. Or use Linux on a desktop.
It sounds like they have workarounds for the exceptions. They're not the most pleasant workarounds with Linux and scanning and things like that. You know, my first read through this is like, okay, this is cool. It kind of solves a problem if it's true about privacy and about access. If they want to control, if they want a net nanny, folks, I'd rather have them setting that up instead and default than me having to go in and do it or, you know. But I'll tell you, if there's that many holes in it, I know what every 14-year-old boy in the EU is going to be asking for Christmas in terms of getting around this. So, I'd rather have them set up a system that is a little bit more automatic and doesn't involve, and as long as it ensures privacy and doesn't involve the hardware, necessarily the hardware manufacturers or the software services like Apple to have to do it on their behalf and become the net nanny. This seems like a workaround. Apple's kind of done this too with their parental verification stuff. Here in the States, and I think that was a big middle finger to the EU in a lot of ways. It says we're going to do it our way and then you figure it out.
I mean, in this case it seems to be like it doesn't require it is using tools that are available to every developer. So it's not something that Apple's or Google specially have to implement. You can store keys on the secure enclave on Apple. You don't need anything special for that. So in a sense, that's a good thing, right? It makes it a little bit independent of the provider of that hardware. But on the other hand, as I said, it is quite restrictive. It's also the apps that can request this age verification have to be approved by the EU centrally. So that raises the question whether they will approve a maybe not so popular, smaller open source tool, or will they just stick with the big commercial companies that pay for that, right? That there's some governance questions behind it as well, like... But especially for the EU, who's so super into, everything has to be competitive and blah, 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 I'm not so sure.
And equitable in the sense that everybody has access to it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the idea that maybe, at least you're suggesting, maybe smaller companies or smaller product lines or smaller developers might be... lessened almost seems the irony of what the EU is doing.
Yeah, and that's the downside of all the regulation the EU is doing. Like it's sometimes it's not that the small companies wouldn't be able to. It's just that they can't afford all the regulatory red tape they have to go through. Right? If your certification costs you $200,000 or something per year. for a startup, that's a ton of money for maybe an unproven business model. Yeah. So that makes it hard for them. That's a very typical EU problem, that everything is so overregulated and certifications for everything and red tape everywhere. And then they wonder why small startups don't survive.
Or quite frankly, even large companies.
Yeah, large companies survive, but some large companies sometimes say, well, we're not playing.
Yeah.
It's too much effort for not enough benefit.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason pretty much all the largest tech companies are either in the US, Japan, or China.
Yeah, with some exceptions, yes. Yeah. Speaking of from the very big guys to the very small guys, let's talk about the small people in our hang jury topic for today. So the guy, and it's almost always a guy, is sitting in his apartment with a laptop and an AI toolset, so some LLM, and is pulling in more revenue than most mid-sized companies. That's what Stripe in its release data this week is showing, that the number of solo operators on their platform is hitting, the number of solo operators on their platform hitting $1 million in revenue has doubled since 2023. The 10 million operators has tripled. So single people, one person, no office, no employees, no HR departments. It's just them and AI doing the work that you needed to do with a team before. So the hang jury question for today is this the greatest entrepreneurial revolution in history? Or is it this dystopian gig economy 2.0 where AI lets companies eliminate everyone except the guy they're technically not even employing? Because, you know, on one hand, one person with good prompts and a Stripe account can compete globally, and it's kind of pretty cool. On the other hand, who benefits, right? The platform takes a cut, the AI vendor takes a cut, and the solo operator is burning themselves out at 3 a.m. because there is no one else to answer that notification, that pager. So are these million-dollar solopreneurs a sign of a playing field finally leveled, or just a more profitable way to be exploited? That's the hang jury question for today. Marty, you're looking very pensive. Like, what are you thinking?
I'm trying to figure out how this is a bad thing. First thing that strikes me is it's no surprise to me that Stripe reports a large amount of solo entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Because if I have a solo project, I am going to avoid a whole section of my operation that involves money and dealing with money, and I'm going to outsource it to Stripe.
Yeah.
So the fact that there's a lot of these reported by Stripe doesn't surprise me. Yeah. Apple will never do Stripe. Apple has its own system for because it's a big enough company to do that.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking, if I'm a small entrepreneur and I am attracting enough use and money through whatever I'm doing, I don't even get to the point where I have to compete with the big boys. The big boys just buy me out. And I was going to say Florida, but I can't go to Florida anymore because of the politics. I'm going to find some comfortable, progressive, wonderful vacation place to retire in.
Hawaii.
And it's too humid.
Arizona.
Too hot.
Too hot. Okay.
I'm kind of northern U.S. Yeah. I like four seasons kind of person. But so this, I don't know if this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's my, when you said you're looking quizzical, I'm trying to figure out how this is a problem. If they can continue to survive as a solopreneur, entrepreneur, then they'll continue to survive, or they'll buy or outsource some of their service. They'll hire a staff even if it's a small staff.
Yeah.
And if they're able to continue to survive at that point, but if they're attracting that much on the radar in terms of money, service, and stuff like that, they're ripe for being sold and cashing in on it.
Absolutely. I don't know. It's on the other hand, it's also, is it maybe a sign of the times that we're in right now? And I'm not talking about AI. I'm talking about the state of the world, right? Financially, companies letting go a lot of people and all of that, like a lot of disruptions that people are flocking to this and saying, well, I mean, it used to be where the job at the company, like you hired at the company and you stayed at the company for the next 40, 50 years, right? That was like back in the day, long time ago. Yeah. That was the model. And it's changed over time already, but maybe now is the point where it's like, I can't trust that I will have a job tomorrow at the company I'm at. So this way, at least, I mean, it might be hard and I might be sitting there at 3 a.m. fixing some issue, but it's my own thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Patrice, that there was a time where companies saw their employees as value added.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That keeping them happy, giving them a chance to improve in terms of finance and skill set was all important factor.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It's a sign of the times and it fluctuates. And you hear about companies going, oh, we're trying to save money, so we're going to cut back this whole division. Mm-hmm. One division has not been revenue generating, or they don't project it as being revenue generating. So yeah, people go.
Yeah.
They're not retooling those folks. They're not putting the expense in there to folks, but they also have not stopped acquiring.
No,
which means they're looking for these small companies that have promise and they're buying them up.
Yeah.
So they're outsourcing their R&D essentially in a lot of ways to creatives who are out there.
And also like the people that you acquire or the people that you have are mostly a cost factor these days. It's not, as you said, the value add that you saw and you develop your people and they like you invest into them and then they add even more value. No, I mean, these days it's basically everything is cost.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, not only that, but the world changed tremendously after COVID.
Mm-hmm.
You saw you were able to have a distributed workforce in a way that traditional models never really saw value in before.
Mm-hmm.
So you see companies trying to, well, number one, rid themselves of costs by getting rid of real estate. And two, there are so many tools out there that make small or personal businesses far easier than they had been in the past. I mean, there are, with any dramatic shift like this, there are going to be downsides, but there's also going to be new opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the blacksmith went away after being, one of the core jobs after how many millennia?
Yeah.
But something else took its place. And that's the thing about business. It's always evolving.
Yeah.
The world is always evolving. So, to say whether this is good or bad, the answer is going to be yes and no.
Hmm. It depends.
You can't go back to it. Depends. And Ben has a really good point in terms of the idea that I just think of it in terms of, and I don't have a small business. I don't do consulting on the side, but I have seen lots of this software that allows you to clock your time on what projects you're using on.
Yeah.
That used to be all hand done, but really not. That used to be spreadsheet stuff that people would have to do.
Yeah.
Now it's all automated. So it makes it easier if the person you know, the consulting should be, you want to set up your own private little entrepreneur business, then here's, I'm the guy to tell you, here's the software you need to use. This is how you manage messaging. Yeah. This is how, you know, that's where the next level of information is needed for these folks that are doing it, or they learn it on their own.
I mean, the options are so numerous these days, where I pay attention pretty intently during the ads on Relay, because it's like, oh, this service sounds interesting.
Yeah, but it's also showing, I mean, I just thought about, like, it, I liken it to the gold rush, right? The gold is the small solopreneur, like, doing their thing and making whatever, 10 million. But the money is being made by the AI companies, by the small business companies like Stripe, for example, maybe a Salesforce even, or whatever, if you need a little bit more. Like, those types of companies, that's where they're really making the big bucks, because they're benefiting from all the work that the little guys are doing. It's always been that way. It's nothing new, right? But it's just, and I think AI in that sense is just another tool like that. I mean, we talked about it, that it's actually not the AI companies that are making all the money right now. It's the manufacturers of memory and, like, graphics cards and whatever. Like, they're really the Samsungs of the world, the NVIDIAs of the world. They're really benefiting.
Which, by the way, just today, SK Hynix announced they are building additional capacity.
Yeah, I mean, kind of expected that they would eventually do. Everybody has announced that, I think, by now. But yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. Like, that is, it's like I said, like the gold rush. Like, it's not the people that mine the gold or get the gold that make the money. It's the people that are selling their shovels and jeans and services and so on around that.
I love your quixotic view of the world.
Yes,
you know, you're gonna whenever there's a position in one of these the hang jury, it's always very much, I'm gonna go, you know, joust that windmill.
Yes. That's why we do it. I think we should move on anyway and talk about some cool things that we've found this week in the drop. And I'm going to start with Ben, who has a really cool mobile controller for us.
Yes. I will start off by saying the one I have here is actually the Razer Kishi Ultra.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first iteration of this. This is currently holding my iPad mini 8-inch. So yeah, you can switch to the stuff out of this. But now they have a new version of this. It is called the Kishi V3 Pro. It's going to be the same size as this. It adds some new features like TMR joysticks, while this has more traditional analog sticks.
Mm-hmm.
I could not see that the new version has RGB like mine does. However, you're not looking at it while you're honing some noobs. But here's the other interesting thing about the V3. Not only is there going to be this same full size that will work on your Android or iPhone, thank you, USB-C, or your small size tablet, there is also the XL. That will work on an up to 11-inch tablet. I mean, that would literally be like holding a truck wheel while trying to game, but the fact that they saw enough people gaming on a miniature tablet that they said, let's try it for a full-size tablet. That's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the more powerful these things get, I mean, let's face it, your iPhone has about the same gaming power in it as a Switch. So there's definitely a market out there. This actually does not feel all that bad. I can't wait to try this on the next gen version of the iPad mini. And yeah, this is also in a thin case. So I don't even have to take that out. And it fits perfectly. And this is full size, so you don't have to worry about those tiny little sticks and buttons.
So Ben, I'm not a gamer, but I do have managed to purchase a couple of Switches. And when I looked at it, I thought, well, this looks like kind of a Switch connector, until I looked at the back and how it's a complete bar that goes across. There are two types, two versions. One's like $100 and the other one is a shorter, or is $150. The $150 one handles 13-inch iPads. The $100 one does iPad minis and iPhones. And but if I pay the $150, I can't use it with my iPhone, from what I can tell. So it is much for 13-inch iPad users who want to have that.
Yeah. Yeah, the XL is specifically for iPad and equivalent Android tablet users.
Yeah. Cool.
Very cool.
And if anybody needs me, I will now go play Madden.
Marty, you even have two really cool things for us. I saw
in the I threw a second one in because the first one is rather academic. I found this app, which, by the way, is free and downloadable, and it sets up workspaces for, it's called I'm not sure I can pronounce it. Atelier, which is Atelier. And it's a scholarly workspace.
Yeah.
I found it. And then I realized this gives me an opportunity to procrastinate on a bunch of writing that I promised would be done by Monday by playing with this app. There is another app for academics that's rather expensive for databases and search called Elicit. And mm-hmm. I pay for that. It does a wonderful job of pulling articles and such. I have four pieces that I have to write that are, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000 word pieces for encyclopedias, an encyclopedia that's coming out in our field. And so I have to do that, and I'm setting up workspaces with this. It's really kind of nice. And even if you're not in the academic field, go ahead and play with it. Because it's free and it might have application for you in whatever other types of things that you're doing. So yeah. I felt that was like, that choice was a little bit too much in the margins for our listeners.
Yeah, but it's also cool to see.
Yeah, it's very cool. I can see myself using this in tandem with Elicit. So Elicit goes and grabs the articles and then I can bring them in. It has an AI function in it.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of, I would type in what I think I'm going to be writing about in terms of setting up the workspace. Mm-hmm. And it would give me a better version of what I was attempting to communicate based on what I had already put in. So I would encourage folks to take a look at it. It's
Atelier
workspace.com. That's why I can't pronounce it. It's French.
Yes.
Atelier workspace.com. ATELIER workspace.com mm-hmm. and pretty kind of cool app. I'm you know, been redesigning what my workspaces look like over this mm-hmm. break, including some apps that DocStar and other things to kind of help make my desktop more functional. And this seems like this will be something I'll be using for my productivity mm-hmm. Process that I'm using. Now, as I put that in this morning, I thought, oh, wait a minute, little Finder Girl. Mm. And I put a link in because we hear lot about Little Finder Guy. And actually, when I searched for Little Finder Girl, if you just do a search for that, you will get links to places where you can download the code for or what you need for 3D printing.
Yeah.
Along with the link in here is somebody who's turned that into an Etsy shop. So it's Little Finder Guy with Little Finder Girl colors. And then I saw mm-hmm. some ones that had like little bows in their hair. So people are kind of really, they're kind of really riffing on Little Finder Girl. And that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found one in the EU. They're keychains, little keychains, and they have both. And it's really cute. I'm like, I might order that. It's from Spain.
And I think they have one. I saw one that has them both holding hands.
Oh, yeah, no, this is actually that is exactly the one I found. It's the one from it. It looks like they're holding hands, but it's like it's two keychains simply. So I'll put it in the chat.
Yeah, I will say this. I honestly find Little Finder Guy a little creepy, but this is adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Ah! I just held up Little Finder Guy. Okay, yeah. So you're quite fine with Terminator, but Little Finder Guy creeps you out?
They both scare me.
It's really cool. Yeah, I saw that when you posted that, and like, wow, this is cool. I got obsessed with this. See.
Now yours, I've been telling myself, Patrice, I need to watch this
because you do.
The trailers have been pretty funny and pretty cool.
So I completely missed this. So my drop for today is a TV show. It's Stuart Fails to Save the Universe. I had heard absolutely zero about this, which surprised me. I saw Will Wheaton posted on, I think, his blog about that there's a new podcast that he's doing mm-hmm. with about Stuart Fails to Save the Universe. I did know nothing about this show, nothing what this is about, but I was like, if Will Wheaton thinks this is cool, I'll watch it. So did you
watch Big Bang Theory?
Yes, I love Big Bang Theory. So that's why I'm like, I knew... Basically, until I started watching the episode and I saw that the title, basically, I was like, oh, maybe this is in the Big Bang Theory universe. I had zero idea what this was about. It was literally just like, okay, Will Wheaton is doing is usually pretty cool. I'll watch it. I'll give it a try and I'll listen to the podcast. It's amazing. It's the guy, Stuart, from the comic book store. Like, he owns a comic book store, has a really cool, like, arc in Big Bang Theory. I'm actually, funny enough, right now rewatching Big Bang Theory because I do that every couple of years. So that was kind of a surprise. What makes this different is it is not a sitcom. It is a comedy show. And it has some action elements. And it's basically, there's an accident and reality changes. Because I think what was the story, Leonard and Sheldon like did something and like some experiment failed and now the reality is different. And basically Stuart tries to prevent that or change it back to the way it was. And he travels through different, I'd say, iterations of the same world. So the first episode is like a really, it's kind of a multiverse kind of thing, maybe. So the first episode is really, like, it starts really dark because it's a really bad universe. Like, people are trying to kill each other, and it's like it's post-apocalyptic. And he stumbles through that, basically. And it's Stuart, it's Kripke, it's Bert, the geologist, and Stuart's girlfriend, eventually, or from Big Bang Theory. So those are the four characters. The others show up, like we had Raj, for example, in the first episode, even, or the second, something like that. So we have, the others do show up here and there. Penny was in there and so on. But in because it's a different universe, right? It's the same characters, but slightly different. So it's super interesting, a lot of fun, and I cannot wait to watch the next episode. It's just cool.
So with the trailer, which is what's mm-hmm. got me interested, yeah. and I haven't watched it yet, but it appears to me like it's got some Quantum Leap kind yes. of experience.
Yes.
So you yep. see some of those main characters in different time dress
yes.
or costumes.
It's the same time, but it's a quantum universe. So something changed. The universe is different. Like they're still in whatever today's time, but the universe is different.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like without spoiling too much, but there's like the second episode. They're in a universe or in a quantum universe where everybody's super happy. It's all very clean, but there's an AI that is kind of controlling, and every negative thought gets punished. Stuff like that.
Huh. Okay.
So, but it's the same characters, right? In that context. And it's the podcast is also super interesting because, like, it has, of course, Will Wheaton, but also the other, like, Bill Brady and what's the other guy? Blanking. The two producers from Big Bang Theory. Now I'm blanking.
Oh.
What's his name?
He wrote the notes yeah. at the end of all the shows.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, like they're basically on the podcast and they talk about it, and also quite a few of the actors, of course, show up, and like what they said is what is really cool is they get to play the same characters, but in different contexts. So they're subtly different every time, because of course their universe changed them.
Yeah, and then think of it in terms of writers.
Yep.
You're in this show. You're kind of not locked into Leonard's apartment mm-hmm. as the scene. The writers can kind of go anywhere.
Yes.
With this, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a really really interesting play on a universe you kind of know, and on characters you kind of know but are slightly different. So as I said, like every episode, it's also fun. Like one of the funny thing is every episode has a title that is spoiler, and then something gets spoiled, but it's never very important what gets spoiled. Like the first episode is spoiler, Gary dies, and Chuck Lorre, by the way, Chuck Lorre, Bill Brady, and Zach Penn are the three writers and producers. And like, there's always a spoiler in it, but it's not very important. They don't really spoil much. It's like the second episode is Zach's in this one. Spoiler. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, cool. But I also like those titles. It's like, okay, what do they mean?
Yeah.
Bird is magic. What could that mean? Stuff like that. So, as I said, it's a really cool show. It's on HBO Max globally. So,
yes. Yeah. The other thing I want to know about the second episode,
mm-hmm.
the second Evil AI episode, do they mention Landru from TOS at all?
Maybe they do, maybe they don't. By the way, the podcast is Felicia Day and Will Wheaton. Like host, they're the host.
Oh,
so both two big names in that scene.
Yeah, that's also a must listen.
Yeah, it was like I didn't even think about it. I'm like, podcast with Felicia Day and Will Wheaton about TV show, and I'm like, I'll watch the show, I'll listen to the podcast, like no questions asked. So, yeah, it's my cool thing.
Yeah, it could be about watching grass grow.
I would watch it. It's probably interesting grass that's growing. Yeah. So I'll watch it. Yeah. Anyway, go watch it. It's really cool. If you're at all into Big Bang Theory, go watch it. It's really fun. And Stuart is an interesting character. And I like that it's not one of the main characters, right? It's not Sheldon or Penny or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a previously lesser known character that we now get to meet and see more about. So it will be fun. Good. I think that's it for today's show. And before I tell you where you can reach out to the show, where you can find more about what we're doing as the Tech Hangout, let's go around in the room and figure out where you can find the amazing stuff that both of you are doing. I'll start with Marty this time. What did we say? The man with the million podcasts? No, it's not that much.
I'm going to keep it simple. A couple of podcasts that I do people should know about, maybe three. The Neo Notebook, which is on Sunday nights. For folks that are interested in this device, we're covering the news on that. Dave Ginsberg and Eric Bolden and Brett Kennedy join the panel on that. Mm-hmm. Then Vision Profiles, which is on Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time live stream about Vision Pro. And then I'm going to throw in a couple of other ones. The Old Mac Gang, which is people over the age of 65 talking about use and different ways in which people in that age group can use it. And then Fade to Chat, which is the movie review thing that I do with Cindy Rotz on movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all of that you can find at thepodtalk.net. Just go to the website, thepodtalk.net, and you'll have links to that and other shows that I'm on, including Chuck's show, this show, and also Dave's show on In Touch with iOS. You can catch me at Gencius, Gencius, on the socials and DM me there.
Yeah, all very cool podcasts, I have to say. I'm always enjoying them. Ben, how about your awesome stuff?
Well, you can find me at Ben Raythig on your social media of choice. You can also find my writings and ravings, at least from up to 2004, on RaythigTech.com, or 2024. I was probably drunk in a bar in 04.
Yes.
You can also find me here most weekends on the Tech Hangout.
Very cool. You can find everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com, will take you there. Podcasts, projects, social media links, all the cool things and the drops that I've picked over the years, you can find. There's a page for that. And I have a really cool podcast with Jeff Gamet called Retro Rewatch. I always like to show the mug because I just love that mug. We just posted, and literally it's been about 2 hours, the 100th episode of Retro Rewatch. It is a very special. We did for 99 last week. We did a really cool episode with Dave Ginsberg where we rewatched the first two episodes of Chuck, the TV show, with also nerd show, kind of. But this week we had a very special interview guest that I found. Someone I met and got to talk to a lot on InSpace, Ray Maxwell. He's done, I think, Mac Break Weekly, if I remember correctly. Something like that. I'm blanking on it, but he's like a really interesting guy. Lot of interesting stories. He's a pilot, he's a flight instructor, all of that. And he used to hang out on the set of Stargate SG-1, and he knows or knew, well, because Donis Davis died in like the late 2000s. He was very good friends with Donis Davis, aka General Hammond. Because he's in Vancouver, Dre is in Vancouver, they, like, he was on the set quite whenever he had time. He said it was like more or less like around the corner, so he would go there when he had time. So we talked about that, like his experience on the set and the things he saw and the things that were interesting and whatever. So that interview is our 100th episode of Retro Rewatch. That was a lot of fun. So go check it out. That was a special edition. We'll probably do that again. Like Ray has so many stories. Like I do the pilot's lounge with him every week, every Friday, and nonstop stories. There's so much. Like he is a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, and you guys did take time to go golfing through the Stargate, right?
Yes, of course we did. Yeah, there were some interesting things that he talked about. Like for example, that the set was very practical. Like it had multiple stories. Like when you saw the exposition room, that was a story up. That was literally a story up, and you could look down to the Stargate room. Like that was a practical set. That wasn't faked. Stuff like that. I'm like, interesting. Like that they built it literally that way, how it looks like in on screen. So things like that. And he liked to hang out more with the crew. Like he was, the actor. He met all the actors, of course, and talked to them and had some funny stories. But he really liked the tech side, of course, and like talked about like how things are recorded and like all of that. So lighting, all of that. So it was quite interesting. Special effects, all of that. Yeah. Anyway, that leaves me with telling you where you can find more from the Hangout, where you can follow us, all of the good things. So we're on Blue Sky at thetechhangout.com, just our website. Mastodon at thetechhangout at techhangout.social. Yes, that's where the name comes from originally. We're, of course, on Twitch and on YouTube. That's where we're streaming right now live. If you're listening to this live, the twitch.tv/thetechhangout or youtube.com/techhangoutshow. I always forget about that. So, and then of course, website, thetechhangout.com. You can also find the podcast. It's also on all your podcast players of choice if you want. Like you can literally listen to the audio version on your commute or whatever. And yeah, with that, thank you, everybody. Thanks, Marty. Thanks, Ben, for another cool show. Have a great weekend and talk to you next week.